Always love talking to Adam Kaplan. He's been covering the league for a long time, based out of the Philadelphia area, SiriusXM NFL Radio. Adam, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Guys, good to talk to you. Yeah, it was a quite the game last night, quite the week leading up, quite the championship game for the Eagles, where, I mean, it's amazing that they were an underdog in three games. Two of them were at home, and yet they won all of them. And they certainly surprised a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of coaches who didn't think the Eagles would come close to the Super Bowl with Nick Foles as their quarterback, but you can never underestimate the value of coaching and the resiliency of this football team has been quite amazing.
Is your city still standing? How does it stand right now on this Monday afternoon?
Well, I'll tell you what. Broad Street, which is basically downtown, that's where everything kind of happens. It was packed last night. It was destroyed, which is kind of what we thought. It was beat up a lot. Certain surrounding neighborhoods were hit a little bit. It's unfortunate. There's a certain sect of fandom that does not know how to control themselves and have a respectful sort of celebration. That really disappoints me. But overall, they're going out of their minds. I mean, the parade's going to be Thursday morning, and someone with the Eagles joked and said that'll give us plenty of time to recover from the championship sort of fervor over the last 24 hours, because I think people are still kind of, you have to remember, what's happened to the Eagles this season was not expected. The 04 team, which played in the 05 Super Bowl, that was supposed to be a Super Bowl team. This was not expected to be a Super Bowl team heading into the season. They were 7-9 last year. Some people were optimistic they would win the division, but not to go farther than that one. But when they lost Carson Wentz, who's probably going to be, would have been, I think, the NFL's MVP, to lose him and still not only get the Super Bowl to win it is almost hard to believe.
Yeah, and they had other injuries along the way. So yep. how did they pull this off? I mean, how did they not only get to this stage? That's one thing. That was quite the accomplishment with what we just said. But then to knock off the team we've identified as the dynasty, the team that's been ruling the AFC for a decade. How did they do it?
Darren, I think it's right. I think it starts with the head coach, Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson's a guy as a play caller who's, I don't want to call him unorthodox, but Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator, used that term, which is interesting. But he's kind of fearless. He just doesn't go by the normal way you would call a game. He throws way more than they run, though they will get balanced throughout the game. But at the end of the game, you're going to see the totals favoring the pass. But they throw the ball a lot downfield, where last season their deep passing game was atrocious with Wentz. This season it took off, and obviously the coaching from Peterson and then quarterback coach John DeFilippo is recognized as the NFL's best quarterbacks coach. He's going to be a future head coach. I know that there was some interest on the Titans end to talk to him, but that didn't happen. And also they couldn't talk to him anyway because he was still coaching. So they hired Matt LaFleur is a really good up-and-coming coach. But I think when you really look at it, coaching is big here. There's no question about it. As you said, Darren, they lost a lot of players. Their left tackle, Jason Peters, who will be a Hall of Famer. They lost Jordan Hicks, one of the best young middle linebackers in the game. Darren Sproles was lost for the season due to a torn ACL. He was their special teams returner and third down back. And they were somehow able to overcome those big injuries. And I think coaching has a lot to do with it. But the fact that Nick Foles could play this well, folks, let's not forget, Nick Foles was terrible in week 16 at home against the Raiders. He was not good for his one quarter against the Cowboys. So I totally get why the Falcons were favored in Philadelphia in the divisional round. But once he played well in that game, and then you saw what he did against the Vikings, you had to give the Eagles a more than a puncher's chance against the Patriots, and you saw that last night. They certainly had more than that. They won the game.
How much do you think, Adam, what the Falcons did or didn't do after they were up 28-3 factored in to kind of that mindset, what you were talking about with Doug Peterson and how they kept their foot on the gas?
Yeah, Darren, I think when you look at their situation, if you've studied Doug Peterson, he's been aggressive all season. Now, I think if we're being realistic here, because Brady's the best player to ever play the quarterback position, and you mentioned the game last year and all the comebacks that he's had, you got to keep throwing. The Viking game where they were up big at halftime 2 weeks ago, well, did you see what they did? They came out throwing the second half instead of running it. They just wanted to put a nail in the coffin, and you saw how the Vikings came back against the Saints, the Minneapolis Miracle. So it probably had something to do with it, but the fact of the matter is Doug Peterson is the most aggressive play caller in the National Football League, and really showed it last night.
Yeah, even going down to the final play, the final drive, where the New England was pinned, Adam. I mean, we got to know Jim Schwartz when he was here with the Titans defensive coordinator over the years. And, you know, Jim Schwartz is an aggressive guy. He's also an analytics guy, likes to study things. And, you know, it's normal whenever you're up like that and you've got a team pinned with very little time left and no timeouts, it's easy just to lag back, right? Give them some room. They didn't. They kept coming in the final minute. They just kept applying the pressure to Brady.
Yeah, Darren, against the lesser opponents, they did have a great home schedule. They destroyed the Broncos. The Broncos, coming into the season, had the NFL's best defense. They put 51 up against the Broncos. They destroyed and embarrassed the Bears. You look at it, though, those games they ran the football the second half, but because they were facing such a potent offense, they didn't stop. And it's a really good lesson to the league. These conservative, these defensive head coaches, I'm not going to call out the names, but some of these guys are so conservative on offense, and they don't really understand offense. They just don't want you to turn the ball over. Doug Peterson's never worried about the quarterback turning the ball over. He manages the game so well, and it gives him the play calling so good. He gets the receivers, tight ends, and running backs open in the passing game so well. Peterson just doesn't worry about that, and I think it's a lesson to these defensive head coaches. Like Vrabel, you got to have a fearless play caller, and you got to stay out of the way and don't say a word and let them call the game. Because I've covered this league 19 years, and it's embarrassing some of the stuff that I've heard from some of these defensive head coaches, Darren. It's if you've hired a guy for a reason, unless the guy's atrocious, stay out of the way and let him do his job.
Adam Kaplan, you can hear him on Sirius XM NFL Radio, joining us here on 3D. It's an offensive lead. We have more than 1,150 yards in the game last night. Most of those were passing. And you mentioned how bad Nick Foles was at the end of the regular season when he took over for Carson Wentz. How much credit does Doug Peterson and that staff get, Adam, for whatever they did at the end of the regular season to make Nick Foles the quarterback he was in the playoffs? How did they do it?
All right, so what they did was and this is not a surprise, though Doug Peterson admitted that he was going to look at it, they went back to some of what Chip Kelly ran with Nick in 2013, 2014, the run-pass option where, depending on how low to the box is, you know, if it's a light box, they're going to run it. If it's a heavy box, they're going to throw, and they did a lot of that. And then they did make somewhat of a commitment to run the football, and it was so successful last night that with the play action, you saw the passing game had a lot of luck. But since Nick took over really in the playoffs, in the regular season, they didn't do much of it at all. But in the playoffs, they really did. They did at least 25% of run-pass option, and that kept the defense on its heels. And what surprised me is that despite all that, despite having two games on tape with heavy run-pass option, that still did not stop them from running it, and B, from the Patriots to stop it. They didn't stop it. I was surprised. The Eagles ran for well over 130 yards last night. That was the one area where I thought the Patriots would have an advantage. By the way, I'll admit it, I picked the Patriots to win. I just picked the experience of Brady and Belichick. I didn't expect 41 points. That, to me, was simply incredible, and it's a credit to the Eagles coaching staff.
Yeah, the Eagles didn't punt in the game, and that's a big
well,
help
won.
To this.
They had won. Eagles punted once. Donnie Jones had one punt, and incredibly, with over 600 yards of offense, the Patriots did not have one punt. Somehow they lost. I still don't believe it.
Right, one punt total in the game. Sorry, thanks for correcting
crazy.
Me
yeah,
there.
Crazy.
Adam, as you look at it, though, one thing that really stood out to me is the Eagles kept running up and down the field with this passing attack and Nick Foles. Is where is Malcolm Butler? He won the Super Bowl 3 years ago for New England. He couldn't find the field last night after being out there 97% of the snaps in the regular season. Are we ever going to find out what happened there?
Well, look, he did play one snap on special teams, but yes, it's a million-dollar question. I don't believe it was strategy. There's no way in hell. I don't believe that for a second. Eric Rowe is a guy that missed a significant part of the regular season. Yeah, he had some injuries. Former Eagle Eric Rowe was traded to the Patriots a couple years ago, but not having Malcolm Butler, your second-best corner on the field, is absurd. That obviously, I'm just speculating here, but I strongly believe that there's some kind of issue with him. But we don't know what it was. There's no way in hell that you're not going to play him on defense. That was a joke, and I totally agree. You're right. There's something going on here. We'll find out within the next week. So someone will have the story. Someone's going to get it because that was a joke.
It seems like everybody's dead set on the fact that Carson Wentz is coming back and he's the starter. And based off of what he's done, it's hard to argue with that. But Nick Foles is now a Super Bowl champion. He's the only guy that can say that in Philadelphia. What does that mean for him? What's next for Nick Foles now?
Yes. So here's the deal, and I know people are speculating that Carson Wentz, when healthy, will be the starter. Here's where the Eagles are with this quarterback position. Wentz will not be able to participate in their offseason program. He'll miss all of the offseason. At absolute best, he could start practicing in a limited fashion at the start of training camp. That's being very optimistic. So right now, they don't have Carson Wentz in their offseason program. That leaves them two quarterbacks. Let's just say, for argument's sake, they entertain trading Nick Foles. That leaves them with Nate Sudfeld and nobody else. So, by the way, Nate Sudfeld has played three-quarters of one game in two seasons as an NFL player. So, obviously, they can't afford to trade Nick Foles. And then the other thing is, where are you getting a good backup? It doesn't get any better than Nick Foles. Now, if someone's willing to offer a second or third-round pick, I think Eagles will obviously entertain that. But, I mean, after the way that he played and the MVP in the Super Bowl, and now obviously the coaching has a lot to do with it, because if you traded him, that team that would acquire him, they better have a great coaching staff and know how to coach him. Because right now, I think it's obviously half of him and the other half is coaching. The coaching has just been incredible with this player.
Adam, what happens if, as you mentioned, Wentz coming back from a torn ACL, may not even be ready until the start of training camp? What happens if it's a little delayed and he's not there for week one and Foles walks out on the field and starts lighting up September like he's just done over the last 3 weeks in the playoffs, and all of a sudden this team's 2-0 or 3-0, and now Carson Wentz is right. What do you do then? I mean, at some point, doesn't this become a problem? I mean, he's the guy who led you to a Super Bowl.
But that's a great problem to have. They're not even, I mean, please, I'm not thinking about that. I know we're trying to come up with storylines for what could potentially happen. I mean, the earth could fall, so you could come up with anything you want, but the fact of the matter is, They're very glad that they have Nick Foles. In fact, I talked to someone with the Eagles last week just about where he is mentally, and they said, you know what? He's overcome a lot in his life. Remember, he almost retired.
Right.
And now he's put together two great games. The Atlanta game wasn't great. I mean, they didn't throw the ball downfield. They just wanted to get – the reason why they called the game short for him is because they wanted to get him to rhythm and get his head right. He's played the funny thing about Nick Foles is, despite how well he supposedly played with Chip Kelly – he never played like this with him. He was tested. He was tested in both games. He showed rare pocket mobility and athleticism. And his arm strength, remember, folks, I don't know if you're aware of this, he missed their entire offseason with the right elbow injury, which was more of tendonitis. And to be able to play like this late and in the Super Bowl is just, I mean, this is almost a fairy tale. It's almost hard to believe, but it happened.
Yeah. What we're trying to figure out, we talked about this a lot today on the show, and so I want to get your opinion, Adam. This changed. Everything changed last night with the catch, because we know in years past or this season, in the regular season, especially the Clement catch, it wouldn't have counted. I believe that 100%.
I agree with you.
Okay, totally agree with you. So it's very clear the league, you know, the commissioner had his statements this week. They're addressing this. They know it's a huge problem, and they didn't want it to get in the way of the Super Bowl. So the question is, now that they've changed their stance, or at least for one game, will they change it moving forward? Do you think now we will come to next season when we see these plays, we'll forget about all this nonsense that we've been seeing for years, and that our eyes are going to actually tell us the truth and the calls is actually going to reflect it? Do you think this is finally going to be a catch moving forward?
Darren, and kudos to the commissioner, and I really applaud Roger Goodell for speaking out against this. This really bothers me. As great as the competition committee is, and they're terrific, they've completely blown what is a catch and what's not a catch. The narrative of the last year is, well, if it looks like a catch, it's a catch, whatever the hell that means. It's another nonsensical point. You saw now that Zach Ertz's touchdown clearly was a touchdown because he was a runner. He possessed the ball. He took two steps. But the Corey Clement one, I don't think he possessed it with that second foot. I think it's got to be clear what it catches, and they still have not gotten it right. And the commissioner has now called the competition committee out and the officiating office to get it right, and the fans are sick and tired of it. And I'm sick and tired of hearing that the officiating office thinks it's clear. No, it's not clear, because we're still talking about it. Coaches I'm very friendly with think it's a farce. And you saw the XFL, the reboot by Vince McMahon, they've made it clear what a catch is going to be. So I look forward to going to the owners' meetings in March. And by the way, there's a meeting at the Combine in 2.5 weeks. I'll be at the Combine, so I look forward to hearing what comes out of that.
Yeah. Tell you what, it is. I thought for sure, and it's just been, you know, how this has played out, Adam. I was like, I've got a group that, you know, got a gathering at my house, and I'm telling everybody, no way, that's coming back. The league has told us there's no way that's a catch. That is not going to be a touchdown, and they come out and call it a touchdown. I'm like, I give up. I mean, I don't know what is a catch and what is not a catch.
Listen, I agree with it. I mean, I agree with your sentiment. It's a joke, and it's got to change. I'm a big instant replay proponent, although it's got to be faster. With New York's oversight, I understand why it's taking a little bit longer because they've got to communicate it to the referees on the field. But I wish they would streamline a little bit more. But for folks who hate instant replay and say it's got to be abolished, no. Too many mistakes are made in each game. One mistake is bad enough, and these are human beings. As great as these officials are, no one's perfect, and when something happens instantaneously in front of you, you're not going to be able to get it right all the time. So instant replay is not going anywhere.